From Austin Film Festival and Public Radio International, this is On Story, a look inside the creative process from today's leading writers and filmmakers. I'm your host, Barbara Morgan. On Story features discussions with artists who use the language of film and television to tell a story. All of our content is recorded live at the Austin Film Festival and Conference, at year-round events, and in up-to-the-minute interviews. This week, we explore the world of fiction podcasts, talking to the writers Skip Bronchi, Zach Akers, and Michael Bloomberg about their hit podcasts, Limetown and Homecoming. Find out about our fiction podcast competition, deadline July 7th, at austinfilmfestival.com. Michael Bloomberg was a successful sound engineer for feature films before venturing into writing his groundbreaking podcast, Homecoming. We begin with Micah sharing how his career led him to writing fiction podcasts.
So, hi, I'm Micah Bloomberg. I'm the co-creator and co-writer of Homecoming, which is a narrative podcast for Gimlet. And Homecoming is sort of a episodic narrative story about a treatment facility for soldiers coming back from war that turns out to not be what it seems. And it's kind of told through surveillance and recordings and overheard conversations, and it jumps around in time a little bit, and it kind of uses a mystery to get into some stuff about time and memory, service, things like that. And it's told through the perspective of one of the therapists who works at this facility called the Homecoming Facility, and her name is Heidi. So I went to NYU Film School, and when I got out of there, I started as a production sound mixer on like indie films and stuff. So I did a movie called Frozen River, and I did a movie called Tiny Furniture, and later on one called All Is Lost. So that was really my career, and I spent a lot of my time, on sets, and then also doing commercials here in New York, and sort of sitting around and listening to people talk, and then all that time I was also writing. So the first thing that I wrote that I ever heard really actors say was this group of three interrelated one-act plays that my friend, the producer, kind of put on. And we invited like 50 people, and, they came and people were laughing. And I thought, gosh, this is really exactly what I want to do, like more and more. So I started writing more and more on my own, and then I started looking for jobs that I could do as a screenwriter. So through those plays that I wrote, I got my first screenwriting job, which was writing on a movie called Stand Clear of the Closing Doors that Sam Fleischinger directed. And that went to Tribeca and got picked up by Oscilloscope. And then I wrote a script with Ben Dickinson called Creative Control that got bought by Amazon. So through those credits, Eli Horowitz, who's head of the narrative department at Gimlet, got in touch with me because, they wanted to make their first narrative podcast. And his background is in prose, as in novel writing, and also as an editor of a magazine. So he said that he wanted to be in touch with a screenwriter because he needed to write dialogue. And so he sort of called me up one day and gave me a prompt, which was, what if all these people are stuck in a bunker and they don't know why? And then we sort of talked about it for 90 minutes, and then he said, okay, this is interesting. I'll call you back. And then a week later, he called back and we talked about it more. And so through those kind of discussions, I ended up, going to work at Gimlet. And then we developed five pitches for five different shows. And then we wrote pilots for two of those. One of them was Homecoming. And then they recorded the two pilots. And they did the Homecoming one. And originally, Homecoming was going to be like, it was going to be these recordings that were so boring, you'd never think there was a story in them. It's going to be like Senate hearings and therapy sessions. And the idea was to make something so banal and strange that you'd be like, why am I even listening to this? And then like a story would leap out of it and you'd be like, oh my God, I realize what I'm listening to. So it's like you had access to some kind of archive or something. But we made the pilot and it was really boring. It was like really flat. And so I thought, oh, okay, well, I guess we're not going to do that idea. But then actually Eli got together with Alex Bloomberg, who runs Gimlet, and they had some really great ideas about how to take that idea and sort of shift it. And so we redid the pilot, and we ended up really liking it. And then we made our first series, which is Homecoming. Alicia Vancouvering, who I knew, who, you know, sort of recommended me for the job and came on as a producer, she is the one who really, you know, her credits and her experience is in indie film. And I think, as you guys know, it's like you have a script, you think it's pretty good, and you just go out to actors and you say, yeah, the bigger the actor that we can get, the more attention we're going to have. We need all the help that we can get. And then it was a weird thing because, you know, writing indie movies, you're asking for a ton of time, you know, like several weeks for the actor to come. They need to, they know that they're going to be in a tough situation because it's like a low budget thing. But in this case, it's a quick process, and it's a little bit less of a commitment for the actors time-wise and logistically. And then also, just as a piece of writing, for whatever reason, this one ended up really resonating with actors. So it was a really incredible thing to see. So I think the process is that Alicia sent it to, or it got into the hands of Catherine Keener, and then she really championed it, I think, and sort of the rest of the amazing cast, which is Oscar Isaac and David Schwimmer and David Cross and Amy Sedaris. It sort of all came starting from there. And I think as these names came in, I was like, oh, geez, like, this is incredible. Like, I'm sure you guys know, like, if you could attach talent like that to an indie film, I mean, it makes it sort of takes them into a whole different ballpark. And I think to a degree, it's the same thing with the podcast, like having that level of talent and having actors like that, it really elevates the quality of what you're doing, obviously. And it also gives you access to people who are just interested in those actors' work in general. In TV and movies, there's a velocity of scenes, there's a speed of scenes where basically you're trying to get in and out as quick as possible. You're trying to, the dialogue serves the story beat, the dialogue serves exactly what needs to happen conflict-wise in the scene. You're trying to get in and out of there as quick as possible. You don't really want to luxuriate in language or in subtlety to, like, I mean, and obviously there are enormous exceptions to this in many cases, but, like, I think as a general rule, I think it's fair to say, of American screenwriting, you're looking for efficiency and you're looking for, like, tidiness, basically. When it comes to podcasts, because there is an amount of time where people need to orient themselves to, like, who is speaking, where are they, what's happening, you don't have visual information, so you're kind of, like, blinded by that. So in one weird way, I've found it necessitates more back and forth and it necessitates more dialogue just to sort of have people get acclimated to who's talking, what are they talking about. So in that way, it sort of stretches your, I would say, like, playwriting muscle. So you sort of are using language and using verbal exchange to sort of communicate stuff. And it becomes a game of, like, how much story can I get across in language and dialogue that sounds reasonable, that's compelling, that's keeping things moving, while also knowing that you can't see the location, you can't see the props, and you can't see what's going on. And I think that, for a person who likes writing dialogue, that likes sitting in scenes, is just a real blessing, you know, because you can get into the way that people speak, you can get into subtleties of language, and that's kind of stuff that sort of gets thrown by the wayside a little bit sometimes in American screenwriting. And I think the cons or the challenges are, so a prop doesn't work. You know, like, if somebody's holding something and it doesn't make a sound, then you don't know that it exists. It's not there. Characters need to identify themselves and each other in order, in a lot of cases, to know who they are. So it would need to be like, hi, like, Michael, what are you doing here? Or, like, you know, voices can bleed together and people can get confused. And then having multiple people, like more than two people in the same scene, is really tricky because it's easy for them to lose track of who's speaking and kind of what's going on. And then I think, similar to playwriting too, and maybe a little bit like writing a novel, although I've never done that, you are not limited by any kind of production, art direction or production design. Like, you can have them in a spaceship. You can have them in a racing car. You can put them wherever you want, as long as you can sell it and describe it. So you don't need to worry when you sit down to write the scene, like, oh, geez, if I put them on a plane, we're going to need to, like, you know, get one of those plane sets and figure that out. So maybe I'll just not do that. And you sort of are, it's limitless what you can do. But then, so that's a pro. And then it ends up coming around to kind of be a con, because when you don't have any restrictions about where people are and what's happening, it can be kind of maddening because you're just in this void. So it ends up being, you know, it's like, it can be difficult to toe a line. It's like, I want it to be clear. I want people to know who these people are, where they are, what's happening. But also, as a writer, you're so excited because they could be literally anywhere and there's no production limitation. I think that the advantages that we experience would be the same for anyone who just has a great idea. and wants to kind of write it out. So when you go to make an independent movie, even just shooting in your apartment with your friend can end up being a very taxing, expensive, and sort of just emotionally difficult thing. I knew a producer when I was a sound mixer who used to say, like, if you have an idea and there's a story you want to tell, like any version of it besides the movie, then you should do any version, because making a movie is such a, it can be like such a taxing and destructive thing that destroys relationships, that destroys your personal finances. It can be very difficult. In this case, if you have an idea and something that's really intriguing to you, you don't need to explain what genre it's going to fall into, because there aren't really these strict established genres in podcasting. Like, the landscape just isn't that defined. And as long as the story is compelling, I feel like actors are interested in working on podcasts because they're new and it's, like, interesting. And actors want to act. So this is something where they don't need to worry about sitting in a, you know, in a car at 3 a.m. in freezing temperature, because that was the only way the schedule worked. They can come and just record and do their jobs, which they love to do, which is sort of like get into a scene and work with another actor and work with the director and stuff like that. So I think all those advantages would definitely be in place for you no matter kind of what level you're doing it at. And I think the other thing I kind of like personally think is interesting is, like, if you wanted to do something that you weren't sure if it did work, like if you were trying to test a concept that was a little bit out there, this is such a great way to do the scenes without needing to get hair and makeup and costumes and renting a camera and lights and all the different people, which is, you know, such an exciting, cool process, and like is obviously can make, you know, like movies incredible. But this is a way to really look at story and really look at characters and how they're connecting to each other and how people are understanding this idea of yours. And they will listen to it and respond to it. And you can get all of this idea out into the world and find out what people think of it in a way that should be less destructive. Not to be cynical about films, but I think, you know, sometimes that's just the way it is. So right now I'm working on, we finished recording season 2 of Homecoming, the podcast. And we are also, it got picked up for like a TV series kind of option deal with a production company. So we're working on the pilot, me and Eli, for that. And so that's kind of taking those ideas and putting them into individual form. So, but also using the sort of methods that I've, you know, practiced as a screenwriter. And then, and just sort of continuing on with the feature writing and like independent feature, and now sort of open writing assignment and work for hire writing stuff that I had gotten going on, you know, sort of before Homecoming and sort of continued throughout. So, working on this podcast and working on podcasts gave me exposure and access that I just hadn't had before, and it changed the nature of my career for sure.
Zach Akers and Skip Bronchi graduated from Tisch School of the Arts with a degree in film and television. Zach's work has appeared on HBO, ESPN, CBS, and NBC. Skip was a creative director and commercial filmmaker at Facebook and Pinterest. In summer 2015, they co-founded 2UP and released Limetown, an audio drama reinvented for a podcast age. Limetown has received over 8 million listens and was an iTunes Best of 2015. We begin with Zach and Skip, writers and creators of the podcast Limetown, discussing the art and craft of writing a fiction podcast and how this medium has changed their careers.
My name is Zach Akers. I'm the writer director of Limetown. I grew up in East Tennessee. When I was 18, I went to NYU, the film school. I knew that that's what I wanted to do since I was a very young person. Went there for 4 years, met this guy, and from that point forward, Skip and I were always trying to figure out ways to work together after we graduated, and that didn't work for 10 years because we both had careers. I worked in sports documentary for, you know, 8-9 years, and Skip was out west. But this was the first project that made sense where we were in our lives and the sort of work that we could do, which was, you know, we didn't have to be in a location to film a story, which is sort of a limiting factor. This was something that we could do remotely and figure out how to tell a great story while living our busy lives separately. So that's how we came to this. And I will let Skip now introduce himself.
after meeting Zach at NYU, I ended up going out west, and I worked for Facebook and Pinterest for about eight years, directing and producing commercials. And as Zach said, we had always been looking for a way to work together. We threw, you know, feature film ideas at each other. We, you know, worked on some scripts together and never had something that we could really sink our teeth into on our nights and weekends, given those constraints. And one day Zach called me up in 2013 and said, let's make a fictional audio drama and develop an idea from there. That's sort of what led us to eventually starting a company once we released Limetown in 2015. Here we are a couple years later. We've put the first season out. We've been working on developing the television series. We've worked on a couple feature films together and developed another podcast as well.
So what I got out of film school, how to write a script, how to tell a story. Storytelling is an innate thing, but there are rules and there are formulas that help and things that you can lean on that people have learned over the years. And so learning that it is a craft, learning that it is something that you can concentrate on and practice and get better. But more for me, film school was important because I was surrounded by people who were broken like me. And I didn't have that a lot growing up. I didn't have a lot of people around. I mean, I have a lot of great friends, and they're all very smart, and I love them. But they didn't have the thing that I had, the way that I saw the world, the way that I wanted to tell stories. And then I was able to meet many like-minded people. And if anything, it just supports what you have inside of yourself in a way that gives you confidence. And I think that really is what it is. It's like you have a natural storytelling ability. Then you just need to learn the craft, and you need to have confidence, and you need to not be afraid to tell the stories that you want to tell. And so that's what I got out of film school. And that applies to this because none of it made sense. Like on a very basic level, like let's dedicate ourselves to creating a fictional podcast.
Even though we've never done it before.
Yeah, let's sink a lot of our own time and money into something that we don't know the outcome of. Like, best case scenario, what is the best case scenario? What happened was beyond our best case scenario. We didn't have a best case scenario beyond this is something cool and we think people will like it. And I think that that comes from that film school experience where you want to dedicate your life to the creative pursuit.
NYU is actually really interesting in the film program because your first year, you don't touch a film camera. Your first semester, you take a course called Sound Image, where you actually are basically making audio dramas. They're teaching you the craft of telling a story without the visual medium first. You know, what is a great story just through sound and soundscapes and creating that landscape? And then your second semester, it's the exact opposite. You only shoot 35mm film, still photography, and you're telling stories through slideshow, basically. And at first, you're starting that without sound. So it's the exact opposite. Just tell a purely visual story. And it's not until your sophomore year that you start combining those mediums and actually start getting into what you traditionally think of as cinema. They absolutely set you up for something like this, where podcasting is not so far removed from what they're teaching you your first semester of film school.
You know, one of the main problems is when you have a film background, you know, one of the fundamental storytelling lessons of filmmaking is show, don't tell. That's sort of the foundation of film, specifically the medium. And so how do you tell a story in a purely audio form that is somewhat consistent with that conceit? Well, the problem with audio drama that you don't have in film, that you don't have to think about, is how to tell the things that you would show. How do you express exposition that feels natural, that feels like it would happen in the real world? The example I always give is in old radio dramas, when someone was going to hit a person in the face, they would say, I'm going to punch you in the face, and then you would hear a meat slapping sound. And you are to surmise that that's a punch. But in real life, no one says they're going to punch you before they punch you. They just punch you. And that's a hard thing to overcome in the radio drama. And that was sort of the biggest problem that we saw in tackling this. And the conceit that we came up with that is a formula that other shows have taken naturally too, is the sort of faux documentary approach where it makes sense if someone is explaining to you everything that you're hearing, and it has a context. So it inherently gives an excuse to explain the things that you are hearing. And I think the evolution of it and the thing that we're very interested in is how to overcome it and still feel natural without having that sort of crutch. And that's something that we're still working on, and we still haven't cracked.
When we were releasing Limetown 2 years ago, audio fiction was only just having this kind of modern resurgence. There was Welcome to Night Vale. There were a few other shows. There was this show. And I sort of assumed after the success we saw that, you know, within 2 years, that was all going to change. You know, I thought there would be a flood of institutional producers and distributors and studios coming to the medium, creating branded fictional podcasts, both to develop IP and test out IP, and also as a way to actually generate revenue in and of itself. The economics of podcasts have matured quite a bit up until that point in 2015, and even today, you know, there's brand advertisers that have come to the space. You can reliably forecast your audience. It's a real business, and I'm shocked sitting here today, you know, 2 years after releasing Limetown, that hasn't happened. That really hasn't come to fruition. For the most part, most of the audio drama you're still seeing are relatively small in proportion to the amount of nonfiction work that's out there. And the work that is out there is mostly independent producers still. And I can only assume at this point that that will take some more time and take some more successes before these majors start coming into the industry a bit.
Once these major players come into the market and once they start investing in the space, that will be sort of an interesting creative revolution as well, because, you know, the arts always need patrons. And I think once patronage truly enters the space, I think that we're going to hear and see stories that we don't think are possible now. And I think that's what I'm very curious about, is like what other people coming into the space will result in. That's sort of why we're so interested in the space, is not only because there's a lot to do in the medium that hasn't been done before, but also we want to see what other people can create and bring in that doesn't exist now. And if we can make shows that inspire that or that make people realize that it's possible, then that's when I think that the whole medium is lifted up and results in something that we can't even foresee right now. And that's really interesting and exciting and sort of specific to podcasting right now.
You know, I was just thinking of a funny story from a couple of years ago. When we had finished Limetown, my mom and dad hadn't heard a podcast before. And I played them the show. And then I wanted them to get a sense of, you know, what is really the best in the industry in podcasting. And so I played them an episode of This American Life. And I remember their response after This American Life was really odd. I think my mother said, I don't think they casted their lead as well as yours. And I was just laughing because her natural assumption was that This American Life was a fictional show, just like ours. And I had failed to clarify that before going into it. And I sort of thought, well, that's an interesting future where you're just as likely to go to iTunes and put on a podcast and it's going to be a fictional show as it is a non-fictional show. And I'm hoping that's where things head, that is the future. If you look at audio fiction right now, there's one type of show that's been produced, and that is a serialized thriller. And so if you want to write for podcasting and audio drama, it doesn't have to be a serialized or episodic show. You could write a 10-minute short. You could write a 3-hour feature. The medium is completely shapeable right now, and that's something we haven't seen anyone do either. So I think the first thing I would do is encourage writers to get really weird. Or if they have a really weird idea, don't let that scare them off, because this is the perfect medium for it. In the immediate future, we're actually heading into the studio next month on a podcast we've been working on for almost 2 years. After Limetown finished up, there was an idea we were super excited about. It's a story based off of the 36 Questions to Fall in Love, and it's a musical. And we've been working with an incredibly talented writing and composing team on this, Chris Littler and Ellen Winter, and we're going to be releasing this in July. And so it's a full-length fictional musical podcast that we're excited to share with everyone this summer. So that's the biggest project we've been working on in the podcasting space for the last year or so. On the Limetown side, we immediately started developing the show for television and partnered with a great studio and have been in that development process that everyone warned us about for years, and it is exactly what you think it would be. It's a little bit slower than podcasting, and we've learned a lot in the last 12 months. But we wrote a great pilot script that we're taking out and packaging right now, and we'll soon be taking to networks that we couldn't be more excited about.
Find out about Austin Film Festival's fiction podcast competition, deadline July 7th, at austinfilmfestival.com. For more On Story, check your local PBS station for the television show of the same name. Every episode is a surprising and intimate look at filmmaking. Check your local listings, stream from PBS, or go to onstory.tv. On Story is brought to you in part by the Alice Kleberg Reynolds Foundation, a Texas family providing innovative funding since 1979. This project is supported in part by the Cultural Arts Division of the City of Austin Economic Development Department, the Texas Commission on the Arts, the U.S. Institute of Museum and Library Services, Texas Library and Archives Commission, and by a grant from Applied Materials. This program is also made possible in part by a grant from Humanities Texas, the state affiliate for the National Endowment for the Humanities. The show is produced by myself, Barbara Morgan. Our associate producers are Aaron Halligan, Colin Heyer, Sonia Onescu, and Maya Perez. Our production coordinator is Ava Mikes. Editing by Jamal Knox. Music by Brian Ramos. Production assistants KUT 90.5 in Austin. Go to austinfilmfestival.com to find out more about the Austin Film Festival and Conference in October. Until next time, I'm Barbara Morgan, and this has been Austin Film Festival's On Story.